Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I am your host, Dwayne Mancini. As always, if you have any suggestions on topics or guests you'd like to see on the podcast, please email the podcast at projectmedtechpodcast@gmail.com. My guest today is Dr. Lisa McDonald. Lisa is the Director of Healthcare Incubation at the Austin Technology Incubator at the University of Texas in Austin. She's also the co-founder of Endura Ventures, Pandemic Tech, and her newest venture is the Texas Global Health Security Innovation Consortium, abbreviated TexGHS. In this episode of the podcast, we talk about some of her various ventures. We talk about TexGHS. We also get into advice for startup companies. And we also talk about making the startup community more inclusive. So, without further ado, I hope you enjoy my discussion with Lisa McDonald.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Okay, Lisa, thanks for joining me on the podcast this morning.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, you have your hand in a lot of different things going on. So let's start with the very first one. In 2010, you co-founded Endura Ventures. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly right.
Okay. So maybe, you know, let's talk a little bit about what Endura Ventures is, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, so Endura Ventures is a consulting company. We're really focused around global health and projects involving global health. And certainly the most high profile of those projects came about 4 years ago. We began work on something we called Pandemic Tech. And Pandemic Tech is really designed to provide resources, both funding, equity and grant funding, and then, you know, actual resources to hot zone innovators. We've got hot zone innovators located in low and middle income countries. Prior to COVID, that's where a lot of the infectious disease threats were coming from. And there was a lot of guidance out that said providing resources for the creation of locally based innovation ecosystems is a good way to address infectious disease. So instead of the United States coming in, you know, and into Congo at the zero hour and, you know, and addressing an outbreak of, you know, of disease, once you've already had an enormous, you know, burden of human life and economic burden, want to empower innovators in their place of, you know, in their place of origin to address infectious disease threats.
Okay. And this was in 2019 that Pandemic Tech was found?
So Pandemic Tech started as a project within Endura Ventures in 2016.
Oh, okay.
And then probably in early 2019, we're gaining a lot of traction, picking up speed. But a lot of our work prior to COVID-19 was spent sort of banging the gong that infectious disease could have incredible economic and human burden, disease burden. And so obviously once, you know, COVID came across the United States and the hot zone is no longer, you know, in Africa, the hot zone is in New York City and the hot zone is in Houston, Texas. We certainly saw a sort of shift in where we needed to spend our attention. And that was, you know, that was kind of the next thing for us.
Yeah. There's a famous video on YouTube of Bill Gates doing a TED Talk in 2015.
It was in every single one of our early pitch decks for
people. Yeah.
And if you look at the numbers and some of the numbers that he quoted, it was like the, you know, infectious disease and pandemic infectious disease could, you know, could cost as much as $2 billion. And now that was just while it sounded audacious at the time, that was just a very, very low estimate.
Right. Crazy. Okay. So this is cool. So what spurred the, is it your background as a doctor? Is that kind of what got you interested in this? Like, talk a little bit about that.
Well, so the way that Pandemic Tech really came about, we had been traveling to Africa, to Ethiopia, and we're asked this all the time. I can't remember the name of a conference, but at point being, when we were in Ethiopia, we had the chance to visit the Armauer Hansen Research Institute and got paired up and introduced to a researcher there that was working on a piece of technology to address a neglected tropical disease called leishmaniasis. Okay. So leishmaniasis has cutaneous forms. It also has a visceral form. And it really impacts areas of conflict or areas that are, economically disadvantaged. And our researcher had just a back of the napkin drawing of a way that you could diagnose leishmaniasis with, and it was really a sample container, diagnose leishmaniasis potentially with, fewer reagents and in a quicker time frame. They were using a lot of reagents and it took like a 10-day incubation period to diagnose this disease. And we said, is there any way that we can pair this guy up? We're obviously, we're located in Texas. A lot of ways, Texas is an over-resourced innovation ecosystem. And we've got this network globally, of prototyping resources. And so we paired him up with a couple of researchers from MIT that did some early prototypes of the device that he had drawn out. There were issues with that. And so just like in everything, it's an iterative process. And so we ended up pairing him with researchers at Flinders New Ventures Institute in Australia that continue that prototyping work, and they've refined it over time. And what we found from that is with minimal effort and just the connections and creating linkages for people, we can take what was an idea and bring it directly to the bedside. And so that, that's a really good example of creating a locally based innovation ecosystem and providing some resources to a researcher as a great idea that could certainly save time, save money, and save lives. Mm-hmm. And that was really probably the sentinel moment for pandemic tech when we realized, hey, there really is something here, and we need to kind of follow and continue this work in health security.
Okay. And who did you co-found it with?
And so co-founded it with Andrew Nerlinger, okay, who is also my co-founder in life.
Okay.
so we've been at it, we often talk to people that are, sort of husband wife teams. And
yeah.
I don't know if you've heard this quote, Noeem, but I heard that if you work with your spouse, that your marriage should be measured in dog years, and I can confirm.
I've never heard that quote before, but that's...
We've been married for 70 founder years, right?
Right. Oh, that's great. And what is his background? Is
Yeah, but we have very similar backgrounds. Okay. He's also a physician. We met actually before the first day of medical school. We were on a camping trip together that is supposed to foster bonding in the medical students. And obviously it worked for us. So.
Yeah, cool. Very interesting. Awesome. Okay, so you have pandemic tech, and that's going to lead into... my next question is about what we're really here to talk about. And we'll hold off on that real quick. So let's talk about your other gig at Austin Technology Incubator, abbreviated ATI. So what do you do there, and how'd you get involved there?
Yeah. So ATI is the startup incubator for the University of Texas at Austin. Okay. We've been around, it's actually the longest continuously running university-based incubator in the United States, maybe in the world. So we've been around for a long time. It was started, started before the 1980s by George Kosmetsky, sort of a formative business dean here in Austin, certainly at the University of Texas at Austin. And George Kosmetsky's idea behind doing this was to create a sort of a think and do tank through an organization called the IC Squared Institute. And ATI was one of those, was really the business incubation, so the do arm of that. At that time, Austin was not the number one innovation capital in the world. There was not this rich ecosystem. And so Kosmetsky did a lot of the formative work to create that. And obviously his experiment for economic development in Central Texas was wildly successful. And ATI has stuck around, kind of changed over time. But really what we're, the business of ATI is to provide support for startups and see that they have success in the capital markets. And so we'll bring in early stage entrepreneurs. We're sort of situated between the university and the community. So we're working with entrepreneurs from the community, working with entrepreneurs from the university, and providing them with the resources. And sometimes that's subject matter expertise, and sometimes that's business expertise to round out what they've proposed. Now we're focusing strictly on deep technology. So working with technologies where there is a core of IP. A lot of times it will take businesses like that longer to get to market. And so we really want to speed that time to get them to market, to get to a Series A capital raise and go out and, you know, and generate, you know, generate funds, generate jobs, and, you know, and generate a thriving ecosystem here in Central Texas.
Okay, great. Awesome. Okay. And, you know, so these lead into, other questions as well. And I do want to talk about the ecosystem of Texas, because it's fascinating, where it's headed and how quickly it's going that way. But let's talk about your newest venture, and that's the TexGHS, stands for Texas Global Health Security Innovation Consortium.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not a creative namer. We abbreviate it TexGHS, and everyone still has trouble with that. So
yeah, no, it's good.
Outsource that.
It's good. So let's talk about this a little bit, because this is brand new, and I heard about it from Tammy Annabal from Temple, Texas, and I think they're a ecosystem partner. Yeah. I see their logo down here. So anyways, let's talk about this. First of all, what is it? And then, you know, where'd it come from? You know, who's involved, and kind of talk about what it is.
Yeah. So I recall that, you know, with pandemic tech, we're focused on creating innovation ecosystems outside of the United States. And so yeah. What happened was we announced an innovation fellowship, for pandemic tech in February. We're bringing in innovators, providing them with resources, all technologies that address infectious disease, all technologies that address health security, which is kind of a catch-all term that defines pandemic preparedness and response. And then in March, that conversation changes radically. So COVID starts to make it into the public consciousness. And what we received on the pandemic tech side is an enormous amount of inbound interest. And the interest was coming from globally, from maybe startups that had COVID-related technologies that were going to pivot towards COVID, from, you know, foundations, social impact investors that wanted to do something to address COVID. And a lot of that interest aligned with what we were doing at Pandemic Tech, but what we found is that a lot of it was coming from our, you know, from the Austin ecosystem, from Texas, from places in the United States, places that hadn't necessarily, you know, been a focus of pandemic tech and didn't align with the work that we were doing outside of the United States. But it got us to thinking, hey, should, you know, is there value in doing the same sort of work, creating an innovation ecosystem that's thematic, that's around health security here in Texas? It's a little bit of a different, you know, a different idea, only from the standpoint, we do have resources across the state. There are lots of existing resources. I'm working with many of the people that are now ecosystem partners on the TexGHS on a daily basis. It's just informal working relationships. And so what we wanted to do is, you know, the legwork to connect all of those partners, to connect all of those resources under one umbrella organization and really position Texas as a center of excellence, you know, in health security and health security innovation.
Okay.
So that's the goal of TexGHS. We sort of went about it by sending out a series of surveys because we wanted to identify what innovators were working on at a high level. And then we've asked them to indicate, you know, areas of assistance that they need. And what we found is that there are people have come out of the woodwork to, you know, to develop technologies or repurpose technologies to COVID related applications. So that was very encouraging and kind of gave us the, you know, gave us the confidence that we should continue working, continue connecting ecosystem partners. We've built out a database of innovations, of health security innovations, and we found that people all need assistance in one of three main areas. And those areas are funding, subject matter expertise, and partnerships. So we're brand new, you know, a brand new organization, 50 volunteers strong, adding ecosystem partners all the time. But, you know, and so the critical mass of that organization is really filling in on that subject matter expertise and partnerships. So even with, you know, with little funding, we can certainly come together and identify innovations and create linkages for people, you know, when it's appropriate to grow innovations here in the state of Texas, to address COVID here in the state of Texas, and hopefully develop a template that we can export elsewhere. So we're looking to support market-ready or near-market-ready innovations that will launch here in Texas and then scale across, you know, scale globally.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And what is, just real quick, defining it, health security, when you say health security? Yeah.
When I say health security, I'm talking about the freedom from infectious disease threats, irrespective of origin. And we use that terminology based on, you know, based on some, you know, work in the field, that's kind of a generally accepted term. So they're thinking of pandemic preparedness and response, resiliency in our communities, all of those things fall under that umbrella of health security.
Okay, great. And then the three areas you mentioned, you mentioned subject matter experts, funding, and what was the third one?
So partnerships, so that we ask people to indicate, you know, three or four areas of assistance, and the three top areas of assistance that people needed were funding, subject matter expertise, and partnerships. And then there's a litany of other, you know, one-offs. Maybe they need clinical samples, or maybe they need lab resources or pieces of equipment. But those, the main three are absolutely funding, partnerships, and subject matter expertise.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, those are three that I feel like I hear a ton of when I'm working with startup companies in the medical device space as well, right? It's I think funding you hear a lot, and I think it's like a love-hate relationship there, because it's like you don't want to have to ask for money, but you need it to to move on. Getting connected, I think subject matter experts. So that's a weird one for us, is what, or at least for me. Because usually I don't think people tell me that they are like, oh, I need to find some subject matter experts. That's like one that they don't realize they need. Right. Or they think they're connected with the right people, but they're not. And that could be a difficult one to find, especially if you're not familiar with the industry. So I think that's a really good one. And partnerships, you know, that's glaringly obvious. So if I'm looking at the... I was taking a look at like the little flyer you sent over about Text GHS, and on the second page it talks about community, government, investors, corporations, innovators. So it seems obvious how the community is playing a role in it. You know, you have connections to investors. You talked about the corporations and partnerships. So what's the government aspect of this?
Yeah. So the government aspect has been, you know, those conversations have taken shape like this. So we're a volunteer organization that stretches out across the state of Texas. And we had the hypothesis that we wanted to create solutions to problems that exist in the state of Texas. And so what that's involved is at a couple of different levels, certainly here in the city of Austin, and then Travis County, and then, you know, within the governor's office of the state of Texas, we wanted to understand what are priorities in the state, because we have an eye on sort of future applications. So technologies to facilitate when a vaccine exists, to facilitate mass vaccination campaigns. But, you know, we wanted to understand where are the pain points here, you know, at the different levels of government, what issues are the governor's office, you know, recognizing that are, you know, that exist in the state of Texas? How can we align the work that we do with those priorities to make sure that we're, you know, that we're serving the state, that we're serving the county, that we're serving the city. So That's been the, you know, the back and forth. What we've found is we are more and more serving as sort of a health security, you know, think tank, having our pulse on what's going on at the community level. And then we're able to serve as a resource to, you know, to state representatives, to, you know, to the governor's office, to different areas, and say, yeah, this is, you know, we've noticed you've heard about a shortage in supplies. So here's what we know about shortages in supplies. And so that's kind of been an unexpected, but I think a very nice place for us to fit in. So we can be a sounding board for specific pieces of technology, or poll our members to understand where, you know, where shortages exist, or if, you know, if problems are, you know, if problems that have made their way through the grapevine and are now, you know, in front of our elected officials, that those are really problems that we're still exist, you know, that we're still experiencing. So.
Okay. Awesome. And I'm looking at, you know, the founding ecosystem partners, and just a few, I mean, there's a bunch in here. But it's all of the major incubators, accelerators that at least I'm familiar with. I'm not from Texas, so it's not like I know the layout that well, but there is, you pretty much have every major city represented. And their major incubator accelerator. I saw obviously ATI on there. I saw Texas Innovation Center. I saw Temple Health and Bioscience District, Med to Market. They're a little bit newer. I think I actually talked to those. I forget the two guys' names I talked to there, but I talked to them a little while back. Yeah. So this is really impressive. I mean, you have really a large network that you can tap into. So if I'm a startup company, you know, with an idea, you know, your focus areas you list on here are vaccination, therapeutics, diagnostic, prevention, access. So if I'm a company, startup, small, whatever it is, and I'm in that space, and I think I have an idea, how do I get involved, and how do I take advantage of this new group?
Yeah, so that the survey that I referenced earlier is still live. It's on our website, and we're still getting entries into that. So that's the best way from the innovator's perspective to get involved. And you'll fill out a variety of identifying information about the work that you're doing and the assistance that you think you might need. And we're working through just, you know, first come, first serve in terms of entries into that database, making contact with companies, identifying what they need, and seeing if we can meet those needs. So that's definitely the best way. And it's what we found also, Dwayne, is that I have hypotheses about what I'm thinking that technologies and health security are, but we're finding much wider applications than that. So we have a group that's working on mental health in response to the pandemic. So that's not directly infectious disease related, but it is absolutely a critical area of need. And so we're spending time thinking about what is that need. Also spending time focusing on workforce development and reskilling and uptraining workers that may have been displaced because of COVID-19 related situations. And so we want to cast the widest possible net and certainly establish kind of and support technologies that are addressing COVID-19 for sure, but really building resilience into our communities so we can prevent this sort of like wide scale economic downturn and, you know, the human burden of disease from COVID-19 from happening again.
Okay. And so I know this is kind of focused in Texas, but let's say I'm a company from out of state, but I want to take advantage of Texas's, you know, new network. Is that still something I can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you an example. We're working with, you know, through our professional networks, Andrew and I had met the team from Epistemics years ago, and they got back in touch with us several months past. Epistemics is based in Pittsburgh and has a piece of technology that does agent-based modeling for infectious disease, for infectious disease outbreaks. And what they were doing is applying that modeling to K-12 reopening strategies. And so they got in touch with us and said, hey, do you have connections at the level of, you know, the governor's office or school superintendents? We have this piece of technology that can inform, you know, school administrators about what different reopening strategies, you know, what implications that would have for both the schools and the surrounding communities in terms of COVID-19 infection rates. And that's a, you know, wonderful example, right? They're based in Pittsburgh, but they're reaching out across the, you know, across the United States, signing contracts with state governments, reaching in to assist school administrators. And so it's a perfect example of a company that was not based in Texas, but had a very real interest in getting involved in the state and providing a piece of technology that can allow citizens of, you know, of the state of Texas to be more safe, that can inform school administrators on what the, you know, the safest course of action is. And so we've made several introductions to them, both to administrators in the state, and made the introductions that they requested at the governor's office, and they're doing fantastic.
Great. That's really, it's a great example. That's exactly what I was looking for. Awesome. Okay. So anything else that has to do with TexGHS? Is there anything else we didn't cover that you want to, you know, let the audience know about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are planning a launch event on October 6th. From 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And that's really giving us the opportunity to highlight several important speakers and panelists around health security topic. And that we anticipate that will be the beginning of a series of events. So we are also planning an event around World Flu Day in November to once again inform both our TexGHS community and, you know, and the community at large about research and efforts going on to address influenza. And we'll be beginning a cadence of events that will all be open to the public. For the time being virtual, which is kind of great because it allows people that are even outside of outside of driving distance, which in the state of, I mean, in the city of Austin can be a pretty short distance.
Yeah.
So it's really opening this up to the community at large. We're seeing a lot of registrations for the launch event. We're very, very, you know, very excited to be able to put this on people's calendar and kind of come together to discuss health security, to discuss infectious disease and think about ways that we can address it.
Okay. And for anyone listening, the website's www.texghs.org. That's T-E-X-G-H-S.org. You know, if you're listening to the podcast, especially, you know, if you're in the car or you're busy and you can't write this down right now, if you just look up or down an inch, depending on the app, I'll have a hyperlink to that website in there. So they can find it that way. Great. That's super helpful. So I do want to, because I wrote this down because I wanted to come back to it, but this is just another draw to the Texas ecosystem. And from a big picture perspective, it's, and especially from an outsider's perspective, it's impressive, right? So when you talk about medical device, pharma, any kind of health innovation, you know, most people bring up Boston, Minneapolis for sure for medical device, San Francisco for biotech and pharma, even San Diego creeps in there a little bit when you hear these discussions. Texas is just making a massive play. I think Tammy was the one who said, you know, they want to be considered like the East Coast, the West Coast, and then they're going to be the southern border, like they're the third border.
We call it third coast, but
yeah. the third coast is that what? Yeah. So, you know, it's been impressive. The podcast guests, I just thought about this the other day. I was thinking about the different podcast guests I've had on. I've had Lance Black on from TMC Innovation. I've had Tammy on, and now you. But you look at it, and Houston has a Texas Medical Center. There's a ton of innovation coming out of there. I mean, Temple, Texas, I had never heard of until I met Tammy. But she makes a compelling case for Temple, Texas. Dallas-Fort Worth area has plenty of medical device innovation, and Austin is, you know, makes an argument for maybe the most innovation in the state. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'd also add San Antonio to that list because I've been very thankful for the opportunity to dig deeper into the San Antonio ecosystem where you have, I mean, world renowned facilities, especially in the health security space. So certainly San Antonio, got to include San Antonio as well.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. There's so much, it's easy to forget some of the ones going on. How do you see TexGHS fitting into that? Is it kind of bringing it all together? Are there other organizations that do something similar?
I do not think that there's anyone that's doing something similar around the health security. There's certainly organizations that are statewide that are thematic. CPRT comes to mind, which is a Texas, an aspect of the Texas government specifically funding and supporting cancer research. And that's been a transformative program. That's taxpayer dollars going directly to research and therapies to address cancer. And so that's a wonderful example. And I think honestly, I would like to see the same sort of resources and the same sort of attention brought to health security. And I anticipate that we will move in that direction over time. Really the idea behind TexGHS was to pull together all those existing resources in our early conversations with different players outside of the state of Texas from the pandemic tech perspective. We were hearing from these major foundations saying, hey, it's great, but we want to fund these network effects. We want to fund large scale endeavors that aren't just limited to one university, or in my case, to one part of one university. We want to see a solution that is spreading over different geographic mm-hmm. areas. And then also, that involves multiple different partners. And so we thought, we'll create that, that there's no reason that shouldn't exist in Texas. We have many of the United States leading institutions and subject matter experts around infectious disease here in the state of Texas. So why don't we do some legwork and connect all of those, all of those players in one place, and go from there. So it's designed, in this field, there is absolutely, wide open space for competition. I think that it would be a wonderful situation where we were actually competing against other places to try and come up with solutions to health security. There's not enough work done in the space as is evidenced by our current situation. And so the absolutely the more the merrier. We just want to make sure sure that within the state of Texas at this point, we're not competing against one another. We're really supporting the work of innovators across the board and making sure that they end up at the appropriate place within the state to kind of take their innovations to the next level.
Yeah. And so, you know, I had this conversation with some of my friends, I don't know, a few weeks ago, and I don't know, I don't remember when it was, but we were talking about how, you know, Texas is obviously known outside of the health, we're not talking about healthcare anymore, but it's known for oil and gas, right? Yeah. I mean, that's like the big thing. And we were kind of talking about how, you know, whether anyone likes it or not, we're going to move towards clean energy. And eventually oil and gas really won't be prevalent, and it won't be a great business model. And, you know, without getting too political, you know, I had said, yeah, and I think Texas has a plan to, you know, fix that. And it's in the healthcare arena. And you can just see it here talking about all of this and talking about all the different programs. You know, Texas is making a big play in healthcare. And I think it's very wise. You could see the government backing it. You know, Temple's very innovative in my mind. They passed a tax bill, and the citizens are okay with paying a small tax so that they can run Temple Health and Bioscience District and draw companies to Temple. And Tammy's fantastic. I mean, she gets involved in the community and like never ending energy, you know, for that. So she's great for it, but it's anytime someone says that, I'm like, I think Texas is going to be just fine because they're making,
and there's also like very cool examples of, you know, specific work that's done to translate technologies that were really coming from the oil and gas space directly to the healthcare space. And I'm always, you know, just intrigued by that kind of cross pollination.
I did not know about that. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that, or
I will blunder any of the associated details. But a lot of work is coming out of Houston, and I would have to look up it and tell you guys.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really neat. Okay, great. Okay, a few more questions. So you've obviously, you know, you've launched startup companies in this space. You've been around a bunch, especially at ATI. So what's some advice you have for startup companies, more specific to like the med tech industry, but it could be like digital health, telehealth, any of those spaces as well?
Yeah. So I honestly, my advice isn't necessarily even, you know, industry specific. The sort of things that we're looking for with startups are similar to, you know, to my husband's work in venture capital investing space. There are a couple of things that sound simple, but they're definitely not. And they're a challenge. Okay. So when I'm thinking about, from this perspective, if I'm thinking about who to work with and who would be a good fit for our work at ATI, certainly they need to have, you know, have a piece of technology that, you know, that is at least has the potential to be a game changer in some way. But ultimately, you're entering into a relationship with people, and certainly startups are entering into a relationship with their funders. And so there is, you know, there are people who, you know, who are easier to work with, who are coachable, who you feel like there's a back and forth and that you can actually help them, certainly at the incubator level, or you feel like they'll be responsible with your money at the investor level. And that's kind of what, you know, that is the main thing. And it's not an insignificant thing. It's not, you know, those entering into a relationship with someone is, you know, everyone is different. Everyone receives criticism differently. But I think that anytime that, you know, that entrepreneurs become too entrenched and too married to their idea or to their piece of technology, and they're not necessarily open to feedback or open to course of change, that to me is a red flag, because in my own startups, things are changing all the time. You know, you make mistakes, mm-hmm. and then you fix those mistakes, and then you make new mistakes, and hopefully you don't make the same mistakes over and over again. But it's just the name of the game. So how you react to failure, how quickly you're able to change course, how well you respond to criticism, or, you know, are people pointing out flaws in your ideas or giving you feedback? You know, I definitely want people that are, you know, that are professional, that are friendly, that if I make connections with them, you know, in the course of doing business or helping them move along with their technology, that they're going to be courteous to the people that I, you know, that I introduce them to. And so it's all those sorts of things. Such a small part of it is the actual technology. It's really everything else that goes around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. So, I've had numerous people on and then they all really talk about, there's been a lot that just kind of talk about the team, show me the team. Investors, you know, they want to see the team. I had one of my, good friends, Tim Blair, he gave the example of, he would take a B horse with an A jockey. And that was his analogy. And you could see it too. I mean, there's a lot of serial entrepreneurs I've talked to who, you know, pretty much get their funding for every company they've been in from the same group of people, you know? So that's a very popular technique as well. So I think that's great advice. And I think, being able to take constructive feedback, criticism, whatever you want to call it, is important and more difficult. You know, I think that startup companies have a tendency to, it's like, it's your baby, right? Yeah. And you think of it as like someone calling your baby ugly, which that's not what they're doing. They're just giving you advice on how to grow that baby, right? Yeah. And change it. And so, I always tell people that is like, just adjust how you're thinking about what they're telling you, you know?
Right. And, yeah. And you'll have a new experience whenever you have your actual baby.
Yeah.
Anyone say anything about my mom? There is a lot of, it takes practice getting you even practice with every new venture, right? Because obviously, we're very open to feedback and open to back and forth. But I've found myself a couple of times with TextGHS being a little bit defensive of the work that everyone's done. And I think that's the aspect of it. You're spending tons and tons of time working on your idea, you know, more time than anybody appreciates. And you know, you definitely have to position yourself and ready yourself for that kind of back and forth. I think so. Team is a huge aspect of it. And then the other, you know, really team and product market fit are kind of the two things.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, yep. Yeah. So, you know, to your point too, I think it's okay to have an initial reaction to things like people ever since I started doing the podcast, some people reach out and say, "Hey, I like the podcast. I think you should do this." And I'll be like, "No, I don't want to do that. What are you talking about?" You know? And then, but I think it's the let it marinate and then say, "Oh, I see what they're saying. I think I can incorporate something like that." You know? So yeah, I think it's sometimes difficult and it's okay to have like an initial gut reaction. Just, you know, let it sit a little bit and think about it, maybe at an unemotional state.
Yeah, right. No, and that's definitely, I find the same for myself. And I hope that I react to say, "Hey, if somebody is taking the time to make you a suggestion or, you know, or question something, especially if it's unsolicited, at least you've got them thinking, you know." Yeah. I'm not, if there's something I don't care about or is not interesting to me, I'm not going to pepper someone with questions about it. I'll just, you know, take note and move along. But if somebody's questioning, if somebody's making suggestions, you've got them thinking, you've got them interested, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great. So I always ask my guests, because, you know, I when I ask a guest to come on, I have a general idea of what I want to talk about. You know, in your case, I wanted to talk about TextGHS. But I always ask them, are there other topics that, you know, you're passionate about related to the industry? Because you never know. Maybe they have some strong, or maybe they have a strong opinion about something. And you had wrote down making the startup community more inclusive. And you also write health, you also wrote health security, and we already talked about that. But let's talk about making the startup community more inclusive. You know, it's pretty straightforward what you mean, but how would you go about doing that?
I'll tell you, but you know, it is actually, it's more related to the work with TextGHS than it might be apparent. Mm-hmm. We're looking at inclusivity in a couple of different ways. One of the things that I hadn't mentioned yet about TextGHS, and it's really been, it's been a growing focus, an incredibly important focus of the work that we're doing there, is understanding and trying to mitigate disparities in healthcare and disparities in the way that technologies are delivered across the community, to make sure that everyone is being impacted in the same way. And so infectious disease has a long history of driving down and magnifying existing disparities in the way that people access care and the way that people live. So that has occurred outside of the United States for a very long time. So it's a widely acknowledged widely acknowledged sort of collateral damage for infectious disease. Poor people and disadvantaged people are affected more than, you know, people in cleaner living conditions, for instance, outside of the United States. So what we found with COVID is the same thing has happened here. There are not shared perspectives about technology and the way that technology is affecting people. We don't always have all of the, you know, all of the voices around the table to be able to provide feedback and say, you know, hey, contact tracing, great for your community, but in my community, people do not appreciate that. They have not been served well by, you know, by any of the institutions that would want to deliver that type of technology. And so we're not open to it. So we're trying to acknowledge and involve those voices around the table, specifically with TextGHS. And what I've seen in the startup community is a lot of times I'm working with the same type of people, and I think it's very important to include, different types of people, different people from me, and not just different in terms of, you know, in terms of the color of people's skin, but probably also different in terms of experience. So most of my friends are a lot like me in a lot of ways. I hang out with with other doctors that are working in technology. And I think that it's important to broaden that perspective. So it's not just, it's not just Lisa and near Lisa's. It's people with different ranges of education, different ranges of age, different experiences in life, because a lot of the technologies that we're developing are designed to improve people's lives, and they know that what it means to me to improve my life might be different than what it means to someone else. And so I think that is, and it's not an insignificant task. Certainly within TextGHS, it's a challenge to make sure that you're including all of the voices from your community that are relevant to the conversation. It takes some groundwork to understand: are you reaching deeply enough and listening enough to people when they're sharing their perspectives, on infectious disease, or perspectives on innovation, that's some of the, we're spending a lot of time working on that. I think certainly in the startup community, we need a wider diversity of perspectives and experience, in life in general, to make sure that we're developing technologies that will help people. And to make sure that people are, developing technologies that will help themselves. So that's, it does fall back to that sort of thing. People need to be able to, need to be empowered, need to be funded, need to be connected to create solutions, for problems that they're experiencing in their daily lives. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's important for startup companies and innovators to consider is you got to get outside your bubble. Because I see this a lot with startup companies, and especially in my everyday work with at CROs, is sometimes you see these companies and they have an idea and it appears to be good, but it's almost like they came up with it because of some unique bubble that they're living in, and you almost know right away that. Once this gets approved, it's not going to go anywhere because the market adoption is just not going to happen. And it's unfortunate, but that is, I think, that's why I think the advice you gave before about being open to people, the criticism and the feedback is important, because a lot of times they've probably gotten that feedback. They just ignored it and was like, no way, I know it's going to work. And maybe they just need, listen and explore that a little bit. So that's good advice. Awesome. Well, I think, I don't have anything else or any other questions. Do you have any other burning topics you want to talk about before we end the recording?
No, I think we covered it all, actually.
Okay.
A lot of ground. This is very, very fun. I really appreciate your time so much.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you taking the time to be on. Hang on for one more second. I'm going to stop the recording portion and then we'll do a little discussion afterwards. But yeah, I appreciate your time. I appreciate, everything we talked about and educating the listeners on what you're doing and the various pots you have your hand in. It's impressive. So we need more people like this out there that are pushing the envelope, so to speak, and really driving this kind of innovation. So it's much appreciated. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you have any questions or comments for myself or Lisa, there is a link to our LinkedIn pages in the show notes, or email the podcast and I will make sure to get you in touch with Lisa. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review, and feel free to visit the webpage www.projectmedtech.com or send us an email at projectmedtechpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you and have a great day.